All right, welcome to day two. Today is basically all things cardiovascular. Let's get all the cell phones and anything that could maybe interrupt us with some noise or music or ringing or anything. Let's get those turned off. Appreciate that. We had no interruptions yesterday. As you're settling in, we're going to be on page 108. I'm going to be with you for 3 hours. We're going to do some cardiac electrophysiology the first hour, and then blood pressure control, cardiac output, and some various sundry other topics. Then to give myself a little break, Andrew's going to come on and do management of your patient with valve lesions, anesthetic planning and things like that. Then I'll do hemostasis. That'll take care of cardiovascular. Then from 6 to 7, Andrew's going to finish with basically a pretty easy topic, but some important information on obesity and anesthesia. So we've got a 1 to 7 day today. Tomorrow is 1 to 6, and then Wednesday, as you've looked ahead, we let you out by about 5:30. I think we're scheduled for 5:30. As you're settling in and heading to page 108 for our first hour of cardiovascular here, I want to back up to last night in the last hour when we were talking about test taking and make something very, 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 very clear that I think might not have been communicated. And that is this, you know, where Andrew's very, very, very positive that the test rate, the pass rate is 90%, and that's great. And you have a, you know, a test that is not trying to exclude you and not trying to fail you. But here's the reality. 10% of people are going to get the tough letter. And we don't want to just put a big lead balloon to start the day, but just once in a while, some things come up in life. Sometimes you get distracted. Sometimes there's a death in the family. All kinds of things that might cause you to get that tough letter. And it's happened to classmates, you know, before you, and it will happen to classmates here, maybe, and after you. I want you to hear this clearly. We are here for you if you get that tough letter. You don't have to try to do it on your own. Please understand, it's not Valley rides in here in April, and then we're done with you. See you later. We will stand behind you. Chris will stand behind you. I know he's worked with a couple of students that have had the tough letter. We will certainly help you. We got 23 years of experience. The company was started, the first class of Valley Anesthesia in 1990 was 20 people who hadn't passed their boards. That's our history. That's our bread and butter. We will not abandon you and leave you out there. And we have lots of strategies and tips and techniques and resources that we don't have time to cover this week. And so please understand clearly, if you hit that bump in the road, if you trip over that final hurdle, call us, email us. Andrew and I will pick up the phone and call you. We will email you. We will do everything possible to get you on the course to pass that exam. And I wasn't sure that that was conveyed last night. So while you're fresh and tuned in, I want you to hear that. If you come up short in December or January when you take it, we know it's tough. It's one of the most embarrassing things. You feel like, oh my gosh, we understand that. We will work with you. Okay? So having said that, let's get down to business here on cardiac electrophysiology. Kind of following up on something Andrew said last night to emphasize the importance of hotspots, since he made it a practice question, let's start this afternoon by doing it. Can you put an X marks the spot on the SA node? Again, it's not very difficult, so let's start the afternoon with a rip-roaring success here. On the left is a picture of the heart anatomy with the electrical anatomy and all these black lines here. Where are you looking to find the SA node, the normal pacemaker of the heart? At the junction of the superior vena cava and the right atrium. And so everybody can read the label. You should have put your X marks the spot right there. Now, the way this picture works is, over here on the left side is the electrical anatomy of the heart. This is pretty straightforward. Let's quickly run down through the normal propagation of the electrical activity through the heart. The SA node's the pacemaker. There may or may not be these internodal bundles or tracts. Those are controversial. Nobody has any controversy about the presence of an AV node. Now, let me add to Andrew's concept. Where's the AV node located anatomically? Right by the tricuspid valve and the ventricular septum. So if they give you a really fancy schmancy color picture, or maybe a real heart, because remember it says in the handbook they will use scanned images, not just my black and white drawing, then you would find the tricuspid valve and the septum here, and right there's the AV node. And then we get our common bundle, or bundle of His, and then we get our right and left bundle branches, you know, the left splits into posterior and anterior, then we get out to our Purkinje fibers and finally our ventricular muscle. If you need a little brush up on that, here is the normal propagation of the electrical activity. This picture over here is a little bit tougher because this is actually the electrical tracing of the activity that's taking place. Probably your eyes went right to the bottom of this picture because here's your old comfortable clinical friend, the ECG. And what this is a reminder of for you in review purposes is the ECG is most technically, listen carefully because I'm going to split hairs here, the ECG is most technically electrical activity. Now, we're very tempted to say, well, the P wave represents atrial contraction. That's true, but contraction is not an electrical word. So, if you get confronted with questions on your in-house comps, on your C exams, on your in-class exams, or on the board exams, and it says, what does the P wave represent? That's a very generic question. How should you answer that? Answer it electrically, if that's the only choice. And so now, let me hear you use electrical words. What does the P wave represent electrically? Atrial depolarization. Perfect. Some people would say activation. I like that. The clean word is depolarization. If you need convincing, here's how you prove it. You look straight up from the P wave, because these are aligned in time, and during the P wave, right here, this is atrium, because right here it says atrial muscle is this waveform here. So let me color code this first one so you see how the game works. The SA node is this line, and this matches up with the SA node electrical activity. The atrial muscle is this line, and the atrial muscle is this activity. Here's an AV node that looks like the SA node because they're both nodes, and nobody in this room I know is missing the ventricular muscle. Here's the classic waveform for the ventricular muscle. So practice going through your PQRST and what they represent electrically, as well as what we'll do later mechanically. Now, let's get a synonym on the table. And one of your classmates came up as I was getting ready here, one of your colleagues, and it was really pretty cute. And yet it emphasizes a really important point. She goes, I've got a daughter that's in pre-K, and they're doing testing strategies, and she's showing me all these little pictures. And the things are like, you know, repetition and synonyms. She said there's a whole chart of synonyms. How could you say angry, in other words, and things like that? So let's play synonym game. And really, basically, we got to go back to third and fourth grade type studying to pass these boards. This is electrical activity. What's your fancy schmancy Guyton word? Or Dr. Lancaster word, or Scott word, for electrical activity? Action potentials. The remainder of this hour, dial up in your brain, action potentials. This is going to be action potentials 101 in the heart. And now, look at it with that renewed angle. These are SA node action potentials, atrial muscle action potentials, AV node action potentials, and ventricular muscle action potentials. Having said that, join me on page 109. Here are two of the most famous action potentials from your heart, laid out nice and clean. On the left, I present to you the ventricular muscle action potential. Nobody in the room would miss picking this one out of a lineup. I know you can recognize this because of what famous feature? The plateau right here. But usually we're not quite as comfortable and quite as familiar with the node, and so we've got to spend a little bit of time here on the SA node action potential. I'm going to zoom in and start on the ventricular muscle because I'm going to assume that you know this one quite well. There's a number of ways to talk about this ventricular muscle action potential. The first one is simply to label it with numbers. The trick is this. We start with 4. Now, when we count with numbers, we go 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, but this stupid ventricular action potential has to start with 4, and then we go 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, and do it again. The next thing I want you to do right now, and start writing these things down to quiz yourself, and I'll get you started here, give the most proper electrical name for each of these numbered phases. And so here's the way it works. Phase number 4 is called resting membrane potential. With that little jump start and kick in the fanny, what is phase zero classically called? Depolarization. Now, I'll give you a second to work ahead of me. What's number one called? Test yourself and write it down. I know you know what number two is called, so you already wrote that one down, right? Here's what number one is called. Phase number one is aka transient, keyword, transient repolarization for phase one. Everybody, phase two is called the plateau. Nice. And then we get to phase three. What's phase three called? Repolarization. But I need another word from you for phase three repolarization. Because look at this. Phase one was called transient repolarization. We need an adjective to go with phase three repolarization to say it's not transient repolarization. Instead, it is delayed. Or here's the Nagelhout word. And you know Nagelhout's a big boy for the exam. Late repolarization. And then lo and behold, you're back to phase four called resting membrane potential. And then do it again. So we've got numbers for the phases, check. We've got names for the phases, got it down. Here's the third thing we're gonna do as we go around this action potential, and I need to remind you, serum, what four things did we talk about yesterday? Three of which are gonna move during this action potential. Sodium, chloride, calcium, and bicarb. Bicarb, who doesn't matter for this thing? Bicarb, you know bicarb's pH, right? That's got nothing to do with action potentials. So get ready, you've got sodium, chloride, and calcium that are gonna move. Membrane, you've got to really start a role today. What key things do you have wedged in you that are going to mediate the movement of ions in and out? Ion channels. That's right. And then last but not least, cytoplasm. I beat you up yesterday. I'm going to make your job easy today. You got one dumb thing that moves. Potassium. And which way is it going to go when it's time to go? Out. Yeah, so you got the easiest job for the next hour and a half because you got one thing to move. So now with those four choices, sodium, potassium, chloride, and calcium, start working your way around this action potential and tell yourself and tell me and write down which electrolyte of those four is responsible for each of these phases. I'll get you kickstarted here. Phase four resting membrane potential is potassium, and here's a fancy word, efflux, leaving the cell. With that little jump start, everybody in the room ought to nail this one. What electrolyte moving which way dominates depolarization? Sodium what? Influx. Good review. Now, the tricky one, because this is pure memory, because we don't talk about it any other time except for naming and labeling it. What two things, I'll give you a big old fat hint, what two things move to govern transient repolarization? Potassium continues to leave, and what comes into the cell? Chloride comes into the cell. Now, the one everybody knows like the back of their hand and in your sleep, what famous electrolyte governs the plateau? Calcium. In which way? Influx. But let's pause here for a moment because there's a little bit more to it than that. We're talking electrical activity, and we're now doing calcium influx during this plateau, but remember, this plateau electrically is stable. It's nice and stable. It's not shooting up. It's not diving down. It's nice and stable. If calcium were the only thing moving during the plateau, we would continue to go up, up, and up, and up, and up, and never come back down to minus 90. What electrolyte from inside the cell will continue to leave to balance the calcium as the calcium comes in with its two charges? This guy with its one charge keeps you up here at the plateau, potassium. And so I want you to put in baby parentheses potassium efflux because it's an important deal, but you know when the rubber meets the road clinically, what's the plateau always about with respect to the heart? Calcium, 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 calcium. And now, last but not least, who governs delayed or late repolarization? Potassium efflux. And now we're back to phase four and more potassium efflux. Now, two things, and you've heard me senior say it last year, so you'll know the answer coming up, so don't give it away, but juniors, you might not have heard this yet. Potassium's here at rest. Potassium's here at transient repolarization. Potassium's here on the plateau. Potassium's here during late repolarization. What governs cell membrane? It's you guys. What governs when calcium goes through and what kind of response at the right time? Different channels for different times. And so we're going to have a different channel for potassium efflux that governs rest versus repolarization. So that's coming up shortly. The second thing that I bet's got a little bit of you kind of wiggling in your seats here and got your pants all up in a wad is, where's the sodium potassium pump that you said is so stinking important? And I learned it in the classroom. You're right. The sodium potassium pump is so important that I want you to draw it on your diagram like this. It's always working at all times, everywhere. And I'm going to write down the fancy word today to remind you it's called an ATPase, the sodium potassium ATPase. So there's some textbooks that if you're not careful in reading them, and there's been some teaching around the country, I don't think it's happening here, but a lot of people come into this with the mindset that the sodium potassium pump causes phase four. That's not true. The sodium potassium pump is so important, it's always pumping, and it doesn't cause any one phase. It's always pumping. Now, that may seem like overkill, but let's step back now and have a test-taking planning strategy. What kind of alternate format questions would this content make good fodder for? Would you write simple model choice questions about this? Yeah, you could, but those would be boring. What kind of advanced questions could you think about that would help condition your studying as you're doing this going, oh, this is the same old thing again. Oh, wait, they could make a drag and drop. Put them in order. How about this? Hotspot questions. How would you write a hotspot question about this? Put an X where sodium influx occurs. Put an X where calcium influx occurs. All right, and so think about hotspot questions. Now, to also emphasize test-taking strategies, where does sodium influx occur? Right here. Are you going to be concerned about having to put it right smack dab on the center of this line? No, because remember what you saw last night? They give you a nice big fat margin, and you've got plenty of room. Now, if I'm in your shoes and I'm taking one of these tests, I'm going to take and pin that darn thing right here, smack in the middle, so that I have no chance of missing it. But know that they give you a pretty big zone of buffer. All right, turn your attention over here to the right side of the page. Let's pick apart the essay note now, and I'll focus on some different things. You know what phase four is called, so I'll let you just copy and paste that later. You know what phase zero is called, so you can just copy that later. Look at this, there's no one and two, so it's even easier. And you know what phase three is called, so you can just copy that later, and then we're back to phase four. But please note this right now. Here is a big, big old tip-off that you're dealing with node if you don't have a picture. Look what nodes rest at. Minus 70 millivolts. Look what muscle rests at. Negative 90 millivolts. And here's the strategy. Let's say on exam day, you don't have a picture on the computer screen. And they're asking you an action potential question, and you got to know what tissue it is for the action potential question, but you got no picture. What's the dead giveaway that I just gave you? The resting membrane potential is uniquely identifying for each tissue in the heart. What does heart muscle rest at? Minus 90. What does heart node rest at? Minus 70. And I'll give you another little tip. Nerves in your body, like vagal nerves, brachioradialis or brachialis nerves, musculocutaneous nerves, sciatic nerves, guess what they rest at? Minus 70. So here's your memory device. Muscle rests at minus 90, cardiac and skeletal. Nodes and nerves rest at minus 70. When we do electrolytes on Wednesday, you're going to need that, so I'm going to test you 48 hours from now and see if you remember that. Now, having said that, let's tear apart this SA node. The key thing here is to look at phase four and notice this feature here on phase four. Sorry about that. Notice this feature here on phase four. It's not steady and stable. It is slowly sneaking upwards here, and I want you to put a big old X marks the spot about right there. And this should remind you of a very important property of action potentials and excitable tissue. That X marks the spot is called what T word? Threshold. And now let's revive a very famous pithy phrase that you should remember about action potentials. If you hit membrane threshold, what will happen? You will fire. If you don't hit threshold, you don't fire. And that is wrapped up in this nice little easy phrase, action potentials are all or none. So remember that if we can hit this magic mark called threshold, we will fire. There's no half action potential, there's no baby action potential, there's no partial action potential. You hit this, the magic of action potentials, you will fire. You don't hit it, you won't fire. Now put that all together in the essay node. Something is happening during phase four to automatically get you the threshold. Yes, I said automatically. I want to see if you're awake. Automatically gets you to threshold, and there's a real famous heart word that we need to stamp on this. This is called autorhythmicity. That's a fancy word for pacemaker. Your SA node is the normal pacemaker of the heart because there's a built-in autorhythmicity. It automatically gets to threshold. And so our job now is really straightforward. We have to pick apart phase four and see what it is about nodal tissue that makes it automatically get to threshold. And here's what you do. Chop up phase four into three equal segments. Chop up phase four into three equal chunks, and here's why you're doing that. There are three different electrolytes that get you to threshold in sequence. And I'll get you started here with the first one. The first electrolyte is good old potassium efflux, just like the muscle. So we just borrow that from next door in the muscle, and we start with potassium efflux. But now, the second electrolyte that enters the cell starts to move us up towards threshold, and I know you know this one from your good teaching. What is the second famous electrolyte that works its way into the cell? Sodium influx. That's called the funny current, if you've read that in your textbooks or heard about that. But let's be content with sodium influx. But I'm here to tell you that's still not enough to get you quite the threshold. We need a third major electrolyte to come into the cell to finish the job of reaching threshold and guaranteeing pacing a heartbeat. And what is that third and famous, third and final electrolyte? Calcium influx. So most of the action potential in the SA node is all wrapped up in understanding phase four, and then it's real easy. We go zero and three and we're done. So let's quickly march through this. What famous electrolyte then governs the complete depolarization of an SA node? Be careful, it's not sodium. And it's not sodium because this line doesn't go straight up. If you're doubting a little bit, look next door to your muscle trace. It goes straight up when sodium comes in. This is a pretty steep hill that I wouldn't want to climb, but it's not sodium. This is actually continued calcium influx that depolarizes SA node. Now, to me, when I was first learning this and thinking about teaching it, it made for an instant shortcut. If calcium's already been here and done its job in getting us to threshold, and calcium influx continues for depolarization, we don't have a chance for a plateau. We just skip one and two. Calcium's here, old news. Go straight to phase three, and we'll just borrow from right next door, phase three is potassium efflux. And then lo and behold, we're back down here to minus 70, pace another heartbeat, and off you go. Now, you know how I'm gonna prefer to show you the sodium potassium pump. It's so important, it's always pumping. And this time I'll call it the pump to keep everybody happy. Now, that was kind of, 15, 20 minutes on this one page. And remember, it might seem like overkill and kind of trivial pursuit, but these are the basics. This is the vocabulary. This is the foundation. And there's lots of good questions that can come from this. So I've given you the pictures and the words up here. Later, at your own pace, you can do the words down here, which is what I just said. And if you like comparing things side to side in the table, there's a table at the bottom of the page. Let's make this physiologically relevant now. Join me on page 110. Let's talk about your body controlling your heart rate right now. What two famous nervous divisions that we mastered or remastered yesterday control setting your heart rate? Sympathetic and parasympathetic. Now, imagine in your mind it's test day, whether it's a comp exam day or juniors, it's a physiology class test, or it's your big board exam coming up at the end of the year, and you get these three pictures on screen, and you're going to be asked some questions or a question about it. What is the really important first step, test-taking strategy, when you get more than one graph, more than one EKG strip, more than one set of pictures on a test? Who's the control or who's the reference? Really start to develop that habit and get that into your mind. When you're presented with more than one thing, maybe it's a couple MRIs you're asked to interpret. That's not very realistic, or chest x-rays or something, but you get the idea. You have to know what normal looks like. So let's practice. I will tell you this top trace is the normal, the control, the reference. Let's call it 70, 72 beats per minute. And what tissue of the heart are we looking at for controlling heart rate? Obviously, nodal tissue, of course. And this is going to be our reference control. So now we have something to look and compare to. What you couldn't see from just looking at one of them, but I described it to you, and now you can see it visually. Notice, once you hit threshold, the line in the sand here, you will fire. And look at all three of these. They're the same height. They're approximately the same width. A little squiggly because I drew them by hand and scanned them. And about the same spacing apart. The beauty of that, just like a normal rhythm on an EKG strip is, then you can tell when something goes wrong or something's different. So I present to you in panel two here, parasympathetic nervous system dominates. Maybe you've done vagal stimulation, or maybe the individual's brain says, more parasympathetic activity, please, from the vagal nerves. What famous transmitters released on the SA notes? Acetylcholine. What famous receptor from yesterday is living on those SA notes that picks up acetylcholine? Muscarinic. Is the muscarinic an ion channel or metabotropic? Metabotropic. Remember, everything at the tissue, at the end of the line, is metabotropic in the autonomic nervous system. Now, that's a review from yesterday, so let's keep that put away and in bed, so to speak. What changed in this panel when vagal tone dominates? Is it the height? Nope. Is it the width? Not so much. It's the what? Phase four slope is flatter. It takes longer to get to threshold. And listen to what you just said. If it takes longer for you to get to threshold, you're going to fire less often. Ta-da. Vagal stimulation, decreased heart rate. Now, really important thing in physiology, and I know you've probably already picked this up, but let me reemphasize it. One of the cool things about physiology is not only all the physiology, but if you learn something one way, you can always flip it the other way in physiology. So you've got half as much studying as you think you have to do. Because as soon as you understand that controlling phase four and slowing phase four down will slow down heart rate, watch what happens here with sympathetic nervous system dominance and the release of norepi onto the heart. What kind of agent is norepi, or what kind of chemical is norepinephrine? Catecholamine. And what kind of receptors are looking for? Adrenergic, specifically beta 1. Is beta 1 an ion channel or metabotropic? Metabotropic. Good. And so when norepi binds the beta 1 receptors, look what happens. You increase the influx of sodium and calcium. And when sodium and calcium get in at a greater rate, you get to threshold sooner. And when you get to threshold sooner, you fire more frequently. Cardio acceleration. And that's exactly what we covered yesterday, that sympathetic nerves to the heart are cardio accelerators. Now, let's pause and mix things up here for a minute while that kind of sinks in, then I'll give you the short, sweet take-home. There's some famous tropey words that you need to use when you're talking about hearts. And I know you're comfortable with them usually clinically, but let's make sure you know four of the big ones so that if they show up on the boards, you won't get bamboozled. Let's do the easy one first. We've been talking about changing heart rate. What kind of blank tropey is changing heart rate? Chronotropy. Chronotropy. Right? Maybe it's been a while, so this is a good exercise. Chronotropy. You also have a lot of agents that will either enhance the squeeze strength or sometimes reduce the squeeze strength. One word for that is contractility, but there's another tropy word, inotropy. So chronotropy is heart rate, inotropy is contractility or squeeze. Here's the two tough ones. What is the conduction velocity down those pathways called? Dromotropy, good, dromotropy, that's D-R-O-M-O. And now the last one, the rate of relaxation for filling is really important. What's the rate of relaxation called? Lusotropy. Or lucitropy, actually. It's L-U-S-I, tropy, lucitropy. Now, you may or may not use those clinically if you've got the heart background. You're probably used to hearing those words tossed around all the time. Look at your agents. You know positive chronotropes. You know positive inotropes. There's also chromotropy and lusotropy, which is the ability to loosen up or relax. So now, having taken that little digression just to get some vocabulary freshened up in your brain, here's a nice, easy, short take-home message from this whole page, encapsulated in one nice summary. Changing the rate of phase four depolarization of nodal tissue leads to change in heart rate. And let me show you how that is going to give you enhanced understanding and sometimes instant shortcuts. And I know you're all about shortcuts, so let's not try to pretend we're not about shortcuts. I know you love shortcuts. Go to page 111, and now let's enter your world of clinical medicine and nursing and critical care nursing and cardiac nursing, especially here. Let's give some agents that alter heart rate and heart rhythm. And you're going to see how easy it is when we go through these. Let's start with number one. On what phase of the nodal action potential did you work to slow heart rate? Well, here's the cool thing. As soon as you heard this word, nodal, in this phrase, slow heart rate, what's the instant answer? Phase four. So even if you completely lock up and forget that digitalis is a cardiac glycoside, and cardiac glycosides do what to the sodium-potassium pump? Kill it. And when the sodium-potassium pump is messed up, your gradients are messed up, and that messes up heart rate, who cares? I mean, you care, and I care, but look at this instant shortcut. Node, slow heart rate, phase four. Now, the Valley guy didn't say ignore dig and don't understand how it works, but I'm showing you that if you get in a pinch, you've got an easy backup. Number two, on what phase of the nodal, there's that word again, action potential, do calcium channel blockers work to slow heart rate? Well, it's fresh in our mind, but as soon as you heard nodal and slow heart rate, it's what? Phase four. But now explain it because it's fresh in your mind. How does a calcium channel blocker alter phase four? Because the last part of phase four in a nodal tissue is what? Calcium. Couldn't be more straightforward. But the cool thing is you've got understanding and a shortcut to phase four. Now, you've got it going on. Be careful. I'm going to throw you a curveball. Number three, I'm going to change one word that's going to change your complete mindset. Let's read together. Number three, on what phase of the action potential does lidocaine or dilantin work to control ventricular dysrhythmias? Here's the word that changes everything. Muscle. Ventricular muscle. Now, this is a really pesky question for this reason. Everybody in this room knows inside out and upside down that lidocaine blocks what kind of channel? Sodium. And dilantin blocks what kind of channel? Sodium. And so you might instantly at first blush think, well, if it's lidocaine and dilantin to control ventricular dysrhythmias, it must be blocking sodium channels. And you would be correct. But here's the concept that's really important to wrap your brain around. When do the sodium channels open and what phase is sodium associated with? Depolarization. Friends, if you're depolarizing, it's too late to turn back. There is no turning back once you hit threshold and start depolarizing. Now listen carefully so you put this all together. Lidocaine and dilantin absolutely block sodium channels, but their effect on phase zero can't control a spontaneous dysrhythmia because it's too late, you've already fired. Instead, here's the secret sauce. Lidocaine and dilantin also block potassium channels in the heart. And what governs phase four? Potassium channels. And that's fresh out of the textbook. I just read it 2 weeks ago to make sure that I wasn't missing something. It's actually phase four that is suppressed when you've got dysrhythmic ventricular tissue by lidocaine or dilantin. So this is a really tough one because there's a lot going on here and you're going to be sorely tempted to say sodium channels because you know that's where lidocaine works. Sodium channels are absolutely affected. So are potassium channels. And the big concept to get your mind wrapped around is if we're depolarizing, can't turn back. It's too late. You've got to do something before depolarization. Now, there's a famous proverb that a picture is worth 1,000 words or 1,000,000 words. Let me draw you a picture because my blabbing probably isn't getting it straight in your head. Here's the picture of a dysrhythmic ventricle tissue. What's wrong with this ventricular action potential compared to all the ones you've ever seen? Phase four isn't flat and stable. When you've got an ectopic focus or foci or some problem that's driving a ventricular dysrhythmia, the muscle is doing this and spontaneously depolarizing on its own, pacing that dysrhythmia. Lidocaine and dilantin, plus you know a bunch of other agents that can come in, will suppress this phase four. Now, let's move on. Question number four. On what phase of the cardiac ventricular action potential do calcium channel blockers work? Careful. It's muscle ventricular, and now I copped out and just said, work. I didn't say slow heart rate. I didn't say accelerate heart rate. I didn't say control dysrhythmias. I just said, where do they work? And I'm going to give you a big old hint. It's a negative side effect. Think about learning about calcium channel blockers, giving calcium channel blockers, and how your patient responded. What do we call the action of calcium channel blockers on heart muscle? What's calcium do for muscle? Contractility. Calcium channel blockers are called negative inotropes. What do calcium channel blockers do to, quote, work on the heart? They decrease contractility. They are negative inotropes. Where does this happen? Phase two. It's not usually super clinically important, but you got to know the concept. So here's my recipe for success. You like little steps to success and recipes for success. You've got two things to guarantee success, at least two, when you're thinking about agents that control rate and rhythm with cardiovascular drugs. Number one, what tissue, please? Is it node or muscle? When you're given such and such an agent, is it heading for the node, SA node, or is it heading for the muscle? Once you know what the target is, node or muscle, then ask yourself the second question to success. Am I producing a desired clinical relevant effect, like decreasing heart rate, suppressing a dysrhythmia, or is it a side effect, like negative inotropy? And let's practice that on question 5 and 6, and then we'll take a nice little break and watch a video together. Question number 5 and question number 6, read together with me. They're identical. I copied and pasted in the figure at right. Identify where calcium channel blockers work, verbatim for question 6. What's the obvious difference between question 5 and question 6? The picture, and the picture means the tissue. And so let's start over here. What tissue is shown in question 5? Cardiac muscle. Now watch this. Here's what you do during an exam and your brain does for you. In the cardiac muscle, where do calcium channel blockers work? That's right here at the plateau. Choose letter C on the computer, and you got points. In question 6, let your eyes instantly go to the picture for reference and orientation. What tissue, please? Nodal tissue. Now go read the dumb question and read it like this. In the nodal tissue, where do calcium channel blockers work? Oh, calcium channel blockers slow heart rate. That's phase 4, letter A. Thank you for the points, Mr. Computer. All right, I need a little break here. Let's watch a video together. Hopefully the sound's working. Guess med school is not quite as tough as it used to be. Got time to make YouTube videos. All right, we got a few minutes left this hour before a well-deserved break. Join me on page 112, and we'll spend the final time this hour on page 112. Membrane, it's your time to rise and shine. This is a page all about the membrane and the all-important components in the membrane today, ion channels. So as you turn to page 112 to get your mind kind of back dialed in here after that nice little break, ignore the line at the top of the page so you don't read it. Try not to cheat and look at the answer. If you were given these pictures and you needed to get some orientation to get started here, which tissue in the heart are we going to deal with for these final minutes? Here's what you need to see. As soon as you see minus 90 and you see cardiac cells, what's the reasonable candidate? Heart muscle. Now, we now know that we have a strip of membrane here from a heart muscle. The next most important thing to identify is this. Which side is extracellular? Well, it says out here. And which side is cytoplasmic or intracellular? It says in here. So that means extracellular top, intracellular bottom. And here's why that's all important. What famous electrolytes do we have greatest concentration, biggest lettering, not most of, but biggest lettering outside? Sodium and calcium. We're ignoring chloride for the rest of the day. It's too messy to show all those channels. And even though there's a bunch of little Ks out here, remember, the lettering means smaller concentration, lower concentration, 3.5 to 5, right? Now, inside, what's the dominant electrolyte, the easy one today? Potassium. Notice there's only one or two little baby sodiums and one little tiny baby calcium because there's almost no free calcium inside. Don't forget we're a muscle. We're a muscle. And what does calcium do to muscle? Makes it squeeze. So we can't have a lot of calcium free or we'd be stuck in tetany. And super, super duper triple important, up at the membrane inside, what are these little PRs with a negative sign? Proteins. Now, you know, we've all seen those pictures at the carnivals or at the mall during Christmas season or maybe in your calendars or on the internet where you have to kind of squint your eyes and look maybe a little bit sideways to see the hidden picture. I want you to kind of blur your focus and just forget about all the details here and just look at the charges outside and the charges inside. What's basically lined up outside? Plus, 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 plus. What's basically lined up inside? Minus, 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 minus. Back to 6th and 7th grade, what do opposites like to do? Attract. What big old bad boy's keeping those oppositely charged particles apart? The membrane. We have a recipe for a very, 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 very important electrical thing right now. What do you call the separation of positive and negative charges separated by a distance and they can't get together? A battery. This is stored electrical energy. And think about a battery. Any battery you've ever encountered, from a AAA to a AA to a D battery to a C battery to a 9-volt battery to a hearing aid battery to a laser pointer battery, what are they always measured in? Volts. What is this negative 90 over here really measured in? Millivolts. And so this is a blatant reminder of a super foundational important chemical physical concept. At your excitable membranes, like your heart muscle, you have little batteries owing to or due to the concentration gradient of oppositely charged particles that are unequally distributed on other side, either side of the membrane, and that's called a battery. Now, why 3 minutes on that? Here's why. All of these guys are ion channels. What's going to open and close them? Voltage. And so now, maybe a little aha, light bulb, good review moment. These are called voltage-gated ion channels. Ah. And that's why it's so darn important to know that you have voltage stored right there locally in your membrane from the little batteries due to ion concentration gradients. Because we need the voltage from those batteries to drive the opening and closing of these channels. Now, let's name the channels. Ready? Get your pencils and pens ready because I'm going to rip off the name of these guys and you need to know their names so that we can talk about what they do and when they do it. Presenting on the left, our first important player, the fast voltage-gated sodium channel. And I'll write that one down with you and the rest of them I'll just dictate to you. This first one is called the fast voltage-gated sodium channel. Each and every word is of crucial importance and I'll explain it to you as we go along here. Fast means the voltage goes boom, boom and you're open and shut. You're done. Voltage-gated, as we just went through, means that it's the voltage required to open and close this door right here that's keeping the sodium out. Now, the all-important last phrase, sodium channel. That means this is a VIP door for sodium and sodium only. If you go to a Titans game down there, or you go to a Predators game, or like tomorrow night we're going to the Ryman for a concert, and we got VIP tickets, which we don't, but if you have VIP tickets, you get your own special door. And this is sodium's special door or special channel. Only sodium is allowed to get through, not calcium, not potassium, not chloride, nobody else. And what does the channel imply? Membrane-spanning protein. So now, let's go to work on the next one. What do you think this guy's called here that's got the hash lines on it? Voltage-gated potassium channel. That's it. You don't have to say fast or slow. You just have to say voltage-gated potassium channel. Now that you're picking up the strategy here, 10 guesses what the third component smack in the middle of the membrane is called. Voltage-gated calcium channel. See how easy it is once you know the game? Furthermore, please write this down. This is called the L-type voltage-gated calcium channel, because hopefully you picked up the little savvy in pharmacology that different calcium channel blockers work on different kinds of calcium channels, and this is specifically the L-type calcium channel. Now, voltage-gated, 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 timeout, be careful. Don't start writing voltage-gated here on this black pumpkin or apple or squash or whatever you're seeing there. Ladybug, I don't know what your eyes are seeing, but mine are getting confused. So, do not write voltage here because there's no gate. take a close look at that. It's a wide open channel, always open for potassium to leave. What famous channel did you learn about in physiology and pharmacology that lets potassium just leave whenever it wants? This is the old leaky potassium channel. Not voltage gated. And last but not least, very trivial to label this guy, two potassiums are coming in for every three sodiums going out, not shown, it costs you ATP. Who's this fifth player? Sodium potassium pump. Good, and so here's our sodium potassium pump. Now, I know that was kind of painful to go through the names, but now we can have some fun because we can just zip down through the page and talk about who causes what. Ready? Phase zero depolarization. Who causes depolarization? Sodium. Ta-da. The gates swing open. Why? Voltage. Sodium rushes in. We're done. That row's taken care of, and so we put sodium through the fast voltage-gated sodium channel. Now, go to phase two. I'm skipping phase one because it would take like five extra rows to show everything, and that would hurt. So let's go to phase two. What famous electrolyte from this hour governs phase two plateau? Calcium. So instantly run to the calcium channel. Ta-da. The gates open. Why? Voltage. And calcium rushes in. Now, big deep breath. Hold on. What kind of tissue are we in? Muscle. What happens to any muscle in our human bodies when calcium is allowed into the cytoplasm? It squeezes. Your hearts are dependent upon extracellular calcium. Absolutely. And so here is some of the squeeze from calcium rushing in. But remember from our good signal transduction talk at the end of the day yesterday, some of calcium can also serve as a messenger. It's the most famous second messenger, in fact. And some of your calcium buddies are going to go next door to the voltage-gated potassium channel and say, get ready, your chance is coming, get ready to open. Because look over here real quick, what comes after phase two? Phase three. And who governs phase three? Potassium. And so this is like an advanced messenger warning saying, come on, get ready, it's going to open. But watch this, look at what that sneaky sodium channel did. And I want you to get your brightest, boldest, strongest marker and go like this and slam these doors shut. Because this is anesthesia 101, 201, 303, and 404. You better know this in your sleep. What confirmation of the fast voltage-gated sodium channel is this when the inside doors slam shut? That's the inactivated confirmation. And we're at a very, very, very special, important moment in time in the heart action potential because we have just achieved inactivated sodium channels. And here's the very super-duper important thing about inactivated sodium channels in our heart. When your sodium channels are inactivated, no amount of stimulus whatsoever will make that heart beat again. That is called the absolute refractory period. This is huge, because if we didn't have this lengthy absolute refractory period in the heart could tetanize, and if a heart tetanizes, it doesn't pump, and that is not good. You know that you can make skeletal muscles tetanize, because they don't have this long plateau, and the absolute refractory period is a fraction of a millisecond. But our heart has this beautiful built-in protective mechanism called inactivated sodium channels that stay inactivated during the whole plateau, thus, no tetany. So, big smiley face and gold star next to phase two. Calcium in for squeeze, check. Calcium in for signaling that phase three is coming, got it. And, super duper important, inactivated sodium channels, you ain't contracted again until it's time. Now, let's wrap up this and get to a well-deserved break. What governs repolarization? Potassium. So now we're back to super easy. What channel gate opens? Right here, the potassium gate swings open, whoosh, out goes the potassium by diffusion, and we do late or delayed repolarization over here for phase three. Calcium's closed, the pump's still pumping as promised, the leak is still leaking, but it's overwhelmed. And look at our sneaky fast voltage-gated sodium channel. We flip-flopped again. And if you sneak a peek back to the top of the page, that's where we started. And so this is called the reset, reactivated, or closed and resting, reactivated, or reset sodium channel. And during repolarization, you could get an extra beat called a PVC if a supernormal stimulus hit you. And so this is called the relative refractory period. So let me put it to you this way. Which channel governs the refractory period? The fast voltage-gated sodium channel. And you must keep track of closed and resting, activated, inactivated, reset and ready to go again, closed and resting. And we're going to need that on Wednesday to understand cardioplegia. So make sure you got that drilled in. And just to make sure, on Wednesday, I'm going to do it with you again. And last but not least, thanks for your patience because I've borrowed a couple minutes, but you'll still get your full 10-minute break here. How do I want you to think about the sodium-potassium pump? Here's the key word I want you to jump on and think about adopting. Restores sodium-potassium balance. It does not cause phase four. It does not cause 0, 1, 2, 3, or phase 4. It's always pumping in an attempt to restore sodium and potassium where they belong to. Because what happens during depolarization? Sodium rushes in. You got to put it back outside. That's called restoring. What happens during repolarization? Potassium rushes out. You got to put it back in. And so please think about using this word for the sodium-potassium pump, restoring balance. Great job. Take a nice 10-minute break. I'll see